Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. And I'm joined by my friends, Scott Greeson of Friends of the Yale River. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom.
Jen Colt of Humble Baykeeper. Hey, Jen.
Hey, everybody.
And we are talking about wildlife human conflict and how specially trained dogs can help to reduce that conflict on the landscape. And joining us is Jessica Reyes, the program biologist at the Wind River Bear Institute. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You graduated from then Humboldt State University in 2017. So welcome back to Humboldt in some sense. Where is the Wind River Bear Institute?
So I am based in Lawrence, Montana. Carrie Hunt, the founder of Wind River Bear Institute, is also here in Montana. So we cover all of the lower 48 states for any human, bear, or wildlife conflict. We work on pairing dogs throughout the states, but we also have the director of Wind River Bear Institute actually is based in Fairbanks, Alaska, Nils Pedersen. We also have dogs in the state of Washington working with agencies there. We have dogs working in Japan on problem black bears and Pikio, especially. Carrie started a foundation there. We have dogs working for us in Canada. So we have dogs working all over mitigating human wildlife conflicts.
Cool. And can you tell us a little bit about the Wind River Bear Institute, how it was founded, and what y'all try to bring forward to promote non-lethal solutions to human-wildlife conflicts?
So Carrie Hunt, she founded the Wind River Bear Institute in 1996, and it was based on a childhood dream, essentially. She read the Jungle Book at 8 years old, and she told her parents, "I want to teach bears, humans, and people how to get along." She dedicated herself to improving communication between humans and animals, and she trained dogs. That was really her passion, so she really knew that the best way to train wildlife was with dogs, that the dogs are a useful tool, and also they establish a bridge of communication between people and wildlife. So she searched the world for the right type of dog and did a lot of research. And she was a bear biologist for 30 years throughout North America and internationally. And she studied bear behavior and she did her master's. She actually developed bear spray with her master's at the University of Montana because she wanted to come up with a non-lethal solution to drive away a bear that was going to maul you. So these dogs in particular, throughout her search, she found these Karelian bear dogs and they come from Finland. They use them to hunt brown bear, moose, and geese. They range about a half kilometer away from their hunters. So they're bred to leave you and hunt for you. So that's why we keep them on leash because otherwise, like I said, there's a risk of potential conflicts with wildlife, but also it poses a risk to the dogs and the people. She brought him back to America after sitting down with a kennel manager there in Finland, and he has used his dogs to hunt bears for many years. She specifically took those dogs that hunted brown bears and brought them back here and bred them for that trait. So in Finland, only about 20% of their litters can hunt bears. But because she is selected for that trait and breeding them here, 80% of our dogs can now work or shepherd bears and used for human-wildlife conflicts. So we use those basic instincts of hunting the bears to shepherd bears or teach them.
So Jessica, it sounds like really cool and interesting work. How did you get into this kind of line of work? Did you go to school specifically for wildlife conflict? How did you get into bear-dog relationships?
I grew up in the Sierra Nevadas of California, where my family still raises animals. They raise goats, chickens, cows, and they were in 4-H and all that. So I grew up with my family always telling me, well, the only way to deal with wildlife conflicts is to kill them. So that's what I grew up knowing. But at the same time, in the back of my mind, I always knew that there was a better solution. So when I went to school at Humboldt State, there were no particular human wildlife conflict mitigation classes at the time, but it's always been a passion of mine. So after Humboldt, I worked, as soon as I graduated in January of 2018, I started working for the Mountain Lion Foundation in mitigating conflicts with mountain lions. So that was based out of Sacramento, California. So I did that in the winter, and then I got a summer wildlife technician job in Colorado, working on the Rio Grande National Forest for the Forest Service. During that time, I met Carrie Hunt actually through the International Wildlife Film Festival on one of my breaks in between jobs, because I would work for the Mountain Lion Foundation in the winter and go back to Colorado in the summer. Actually, April of 2019 is where I met Carrie Hunt at the International Wildlife Film Festival in Missoula, Montana. I happened to mention to her, oh, I work in Colorado in the summers, and this is what I do. And then I work for the Mountain Lion Foundation in the winters. And she said, oh, I have a great friend who works for Bear Smart Durango in Colorado. You should get in touch with him. So I did when I went back to Colorado that following summer, and he needed my help in creating a campground education outreach plan for campgrounds in the Durango area, which is southwest Colorado. The campgrounds there were experiencing frequent black bear conflicts, with black bears breaking into tents, breaking into cars. They had 10 car break-ins within a week's period of time. So I worked with him in assessing the campgrounds, talking to the hosts, putting together an education outreach plan and brochures and handouts and things like that for the campers. And I also did some of that bear conflict mitigation when I was working for the Forest Service for some campgrounds that were experiencing black bear conflicts in the backcountry. We had some wilderness trail campgrounds that they were improperly hanging their food, unfortunately, hanging it 4 feet off the ground or right up against the base of a tree, and the black bears were frequently getting into their food. That bear, unfortunately, had to be put down because it was beyond helping. Anyway, I was helping the Forest Service put up permanent bear hang lines and teaching people how to properly hang their food. So that's how I met Carrie. And then after that summer in 2019, she offered me the internship position here in Montana. So that's how I got here.
Wonderful. And now you live in a space that still has brown bears. Is that right? We still have brown bears in Montana?
Correct. And actually, I've been working with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we've been working with the Grizzly Bear Recovery Coordinator because it is still an endangered species, but we have 4 ecosystems within the state of Montana that are considered recovery ecosystems. So we have the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, the Cabinet Yak Ecosystem, and the Bitterroot Ecosystem. The Selkirks is actually bordering Idaho and Montana. But I live in the Bitterroot Recovery Ecosystem. So we have had a few grizzly bears pass through, but we don't have an established population in this area yet. That's because the same things that attract black bears attract grizzly bears into conflicts with people. We have been working throughout the Bitterroot Valley and mitigating and preventing conflicts, establishing infrastructure like bear-resistant garbage cans. We've been doing education outreach for the folks moving into the area that aren't familiar living with bears, people that have lived here for a long time but are experiencing conflicts with black bears.
So Jessica, have you grown up with dogs, training dogs your whole life, or did you learn this after you started working with the Institute, or how did you get into the dog part of the whole thing?
I grew up with dogs. I always loved dogs. I trained dogs from a young kid, but yeah, I haven't actually officially trained dogs until I started with this position and learning how to use them for conflict mitigation. So that was all new to me when I first arrived here.
So how do you use them for conflict mitigation? I'm sure there's lots of different ways, but you mentioned keeping them on a leash. I mean, how does that all work? What happens when there's a nuisance bear, or, you know, bear that needs to learn to stay away from a town or a residence? What do you do?
The dogs are a useful tool that are very versatile. We use them for education outreach. We use them for presentations, to show people how we teach the bears and how bears learn the bad behavior. So we do this little skit where we actually set up props showing people what attracts a bear into a household. For instance, bird feeders, garbage, pet food unsecured, horse or chicken feed, grain, anything like that attracts a bear in. So we will set up a house with these props showing people, okay, this is how the bear learns. And we have this bear suit that people wear. Somebody wears a bear suit and pretends to be the bear and gets into these problem things and makes a mess of the whole place. And we have real bear poop that the bear poops. Then the homeowner comes back and says, oh no, what happened to my house? My chicken coop and my porch is destroyed. What happened? And then they call Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, who in turn calls us. We come in with the dogs. The dogs show us what the bear got into, where the bear went and where it came from, and where it is at that time. So whenever we get a conflict call for a bear, somebody says, oh, a bear was in my chicken coop or a bear was in my garbage, we come out with the dogs. So we assist Fish, Wildlife, and Parks with conflicts like that. We go on site with the dogs on leash. First, we track with the dogs and talk with the homeowners. Again, to the dogs tell us what the bear got into, where the bear was, and they track us to where the bear came from and where it went out to. And they tell us if the bear is still hanging around there. So they show us all of the bear sign, the tracks, the scat, and hair. They'll point us out to any hair, and they'll show any destruction that the bear caused. So anywhere the bear was, the dog identifies that and shows us. And we in turn can communicate that with the homeowner. And it gives us a better idea of how to mitigate the conflicts. You know, what do we need to secure here? What was the bear attracted to? And how can we prevent this from happening again? So then we work with the homeowner in getting everything secured. Like I said, make sure that their garbage is in a safe and secure spot. If they have a garage or a shed, we recommend that they put it all the way to the back of the wall, away from any doors or windows, so the bear can't smell it and won't tear into it. If they don't have that option, then we do have a bear resistant garbage can loaner program where we are able to loan bear resistant garbage cans to people in need of them living in areas where bears frequently get into their garbage. We also offer temporary electric fencing for people, where we'll set up an electric fence around a chicken coop or beehive or anything like that. What's great about Montana, since we do have grizzly bears, there are a lot of these resources and tools available for conflict mitigation. For instance, Defenders of Wildlife has this cost share incentive program where they will match up to $500 and come out and help you set up a permanent electric fence. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, so we have all of these tools at our disposal, and the dogs are one of our tools. And like I said, they're very versatile. For one, they are very friendly with people and kids and other dogs. So, and people tend to take the message from the dog a lot easier. Like, it's a lot easier to come across to people saying, well, the dog told us that the bear was into your garage, rather than us coming off as like, we always say, we're coming off as the Gestapo telling them, you can't do that. Because a lot of people take that message as easily from a person, but from a dog, it's much easier. So that's why I said they create a bridge between people and agencies and make it a lot easier to communicate with people, make the messaging easier for people to accept.
The Eco News Report, and we're talking about using dogs to reduce conflicts with bears.
And like I said, we use them for presentations, tracking. We've used them to solve poaching cases. We've used them to track us into dead bears, collared bears, identify any bear sign. So we patrol campgrounds if a bear is frequenting a campground. A lot of events will hire us to patrol campgrounds For instance, there's a bike event in Yellowstone in Cook City that they camp there with all the bikers, the mountain bikers from all different states. They come here for this big event. But when they're camping, they want us to patrol the area for any bear activity to keep it safe. So we'll patrol the dogs 24 hours a day, but mostly at night. And we just walk around the campground with the dogs. The dogs alert us to any bears by barking. Carrie also has used them for roadside conditioning of bears. Like, for instance, I'm sure you've heard about that bear that was on Togarty Pass, where tourists were frequently stopping and taking pictures, and she was there with her cubs. And so we would condition her by what we call striking. We drive by the bear, the dogs bark at the bear through the windows, and we're yelling at the bear. And that is how we condition roadside bears, is by teaching them this is not a safe place to be, because you will get into potential conflict. You know, getting hit by a car is the biggest risk factor there. But the main thing is to secure all of the attractants. Before we can teach a bear any lesson, we have to secure all of the attractants in the area. And then we can teach the bear the lesson with the dogs. The dogs and people surround. So it's usually two people, two dogs. We surround the bear, shooting rubber bullets at it, yelling at it at the same time as the dog is barking. And the rubber bullet acts like the dog biting it. But the dogs never come into contact with the bear. So Carrie's been doing this for 26 years. No dog, human, or bear has ever been injured because she follows strict safety protocols in doing this work with the dogs. Like I said, they're always on leash because of that. And also just keeping in mind, so not every scenario is suitable for a dog conditioning a bear.
Well, it's very cool that you're able to teach both the bears and the dogs, bears and humans, using the
yes,
dogs
bears and
about each other. You teach the
exactly.
bears. Yeah, you don't want to be around us. It's going to come at a cost. You're going to get barked at. You're going to get hit with a bullet or a rubber bullet, a non-lethal round. Yeah. And you teach the humans how they can avoid attracting these bears and having conflict in the first place. So pretty neat stuff. And the alternative is something worse. So if we don't try to engage in non-lethal conflict avoidance measures like this by reducing attractants and also trying to learn how to scare bears off of being around humans, what is the alternative? Do you work with or do you engage with wildlife services or any of the other folks who often kind of turn to the bullet instead?
So Wildlife Services typically deals with livestock conflict mitigation particularly. So if it is a livestock conflict where the bear has killed a livestock animal, a cow, a calf, anything like that, then they will get called in and they will set a trap and lethally remove the bear. The bears unfortunately end up in the landfill once they are killed. It's such a waste. We actually here at Wind River Bear Institute, we pride ourselves on not being too green or too red, and we encourage all the hunters in the area. If there is a problem bear that unfortunately cannot be turned around, we will notify the hunters and say we would much rather see this bear go to use and get used for meat rather than wind up in the landfill. So that's how we deal with it. But Fish, Wildlife, and Parks will also set traps. Wardens will euthanize black bears, and again, they remove them. Occasionally, they do relocate bears, but they don't like to. And again, it all depends on the conflict level of the bear. So Carrie has been doing this work. She's actually working on her manual right now as we speak and publishing it, because of all the years that she's worked with bears and doing this and teaching bears, she has developed this whole index of levels of conflicts of bears and knowing when it is appropriate to teach a bear, when you can teach a bear, and when they get beyond that point to where unfortunately they're unteachable. So for instance, a bear breaking into a home that is occupied, there's people in there and it shows no fear of people. That's a really high conflict level bear. So at that point, it's really hard to train a bear. Absolutely. Or if it's a livestock killing bear. And once they get the taste for that blood, unfortunately, it's really hard to turn them around. So 9 times out of 10, that bear does have to be euthanized, unfortunately. But we try to, again, prevent it from getting to that point by working with people and working with the bears and preventing those conflicts.
So I noticed that you also work with other animals, and you earlier you talked about working with mountain lions in the winter, and I'm really curious, why only in the winter?
At the time, I was working a seasonal job, so I would work seasonally with the Forest Service, and in the winter I would work for the Mountain Lion Foundation, and currently I track mountain lions for MPG Ranch in the winter time. And I do the bear conflict mitigation during the summer because bears den up in the winter months.
Oh, right. So it's not that the mountain lions are more of a conflict in the wintertime necessarily. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's the bears are more of a conflict. So the bears come out. We typically tell people the time you can have bird feeders out is April 1st through typically Thanksgiving Day because... Or so bears typically go into their dens around Thanksgiving Day, and then they come out around April 1st. So during those winter months, people can have bird feeders, and they don't have to worry about conflicts with bears. So that's the alternative for completely not having a bird feeder. As far as tracking mountain lions in the winter, it's just easier to track them because we have snow to track with, whereas... It's a lot harder to track mountain lions without snow if you're not using a dog.
Can we talk a little bit about the dogs themselves? Because I think that a lot of our listening audience might not be very familiar with bears, although we have a ton of black bears in Northwest California. But might be interested just to learn more about this Karelian bear dog. You said it was a Finnish dog. Can you kind of describe what a Karelian bear dog is like, temperamentally, how big it is, and so on?
So the average size of a Karelian bear dog is 45 to 65 pounds. So they're not very big. I handle Yanni, and he is 65 pounds. His older brother is 75 pounds. So he's as big as they get, and he is much harder to handle. We say that he is four-wheel drive because he has these massive muscles in his back legs, and he just pulls like crazy. And Carrie actually had to have shoulder surgery recently because of him pulling so hard on her during bear work. Because when we're working with the dogs, they're attached to a belt harness on us. The dogs have a harness on them and we have a belt harness on us. So they are attached to us. So wherever the dog goes, they pull us into that. Temperamentally, they all have different personalities and characteristics, just like people, and they all have different skill sets. So we really pride ourselves on our testing and evaluation of our puppies, of all of our puppy litters, to determine their natural skill sets and personalities and meet them to the needs and personalities of the owners. Testing usually begins at 3 weeks old, which is when personalities start to really shine through for the dogs and their natural skill sets and abilities. Carrie puts them through field testing at 3 to 5 weeks old with a course of bear mounts that she puts up and cougar mounts and different bear parts and cougar parts in this field course and runs the puppy through it to see how they respond to it. So that's how we determine if they are a conflict dog, an alert dog, or a companion dog. Because again, that's their personality. Some dogs will be fully engaged. Like for instance, Yanni, I say that he has this fire in him that if I didn't rein him back with a leash, he would jump on a grizzly bear's back and try to eat him. He is full of passion and that high prey drive. Whereas his brother, Mowgli, is a calculated risk taker and he will go into a situation, he'll engage with the bear, but he's very calculated as far as gauging the risk factors before he actually engages with the bear. And he'll keep his distance and go in slowly.
Scott's like Yanni, Jen's like Mowgli, and I'm like the dog that it's too dumb, but is just quite friendly. And so it becomes a companion animal instead.
Yeah, and Yanni's younger brother, Traveler, we actually sent him to Connecticut to be a search and rescue dog because he has this amazing nose on him. He was a great tracker, but he didn't want anything to do with conflict. He would tuck tail and run away from a bear.
That's how my last dog was. She saw the first time she saw a bear, she ran to me and sat on my foot. I was like, oh, that's good. That's good.
So what I'm hearing is they come in three flavors, crazy, brave, and smart.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mowgli is smart. Yanni is smart, but he's also crazy. What we call alert dogs, those are the dogs that will bark to alert you on a bear or a moose or a cougar and let you know, hey, there is danger there. There is an animal there, just letting you know, but sticking with you. But they won't want to engage in the bear. So engaging with the bear, that's the ones we call conflict dogs. So those are the ones that we actually use to shepherd the bears. And as I started to say earlier with Carrie's breeding protocol, 80% of our dogs can work bears. They are conflict dogs because of her breeding for that special characteristic.
When you say shepherding the bear, tell us what that means. Is that chasing them away, basically?
So shepherding, as I started to say earlier, we surround the bear with the two dogs. Bear shepherding, again, we select for that trait. And what we call it dancing with the bear because these dogs are very agile with their size. And they will surround the bear. Two people, two dogs, always when we shepherd a bear, and we will surround the bear.
Can you remind people how much a bear weighs? You're talking about 60-pound dogs max, 150-pound people. What's a bear?
Bear varies. Black bears can be very small, from 100 to 350 pounds. A grizzly bear can be from 300 pounds to 600 pounds.
And I've seen a black bear, well, what a black bear did to the front of a Toyota truck when somebody left an apple in it and went for a hike, and he just peeled the front door completely off. So they're fairly strong for their size.
They are very strong for their size.
When you're dancing with a bear, that's kind of like dancing with a dragon.
Well, so bears, you have to think in terms of how a bear thinks. Bears view people as bears, essentially. So they look at posturing. So when you encounter a bear, you need to think about your posture towards the bear and how they see that, if they see it as a threat or if they see you as giving them space to. Most of the time, the bear wants to get away from you. It doesn't want any conflict with you. So it will try to get away from you. Also, they look at numbers and gauge the risks of engaging with a person by numbers. So if you outnumber a bear, it's one bear, you think about it, you have four against them, two people, two dogs. That's why we never work a bear less than two people and two dogs, because we know that bears view it as numbers. Believe it or not, females with cubs are easier to teach because they weigh the risks to their cubs more so than a male will, because they don't want to have any risks to their cubs and will try to avoid that risk as much as possible. And if they see that they're outnumbered and that risk potential is greater than what they can provide, then they will back off and they just want a safety net for their cubs. They want space. So we try to give them that space. Like I said, we surround the bear with the two dogs, two people. We're yelling at them, basically trying to tell them, that's yours, this is ours. You go back where you belong and stay away from us and ours. This is not where you belong. So that's us teaching them. So we're yelling at the bear, like I said, get out of here, bear. At the same time, the dog is barking and we're shooting rubber bullets at it. Now, this is all within like 30 to 100 feet. We try to keep a good safe distance again, and the dogs are attached to us on 6-foot leashes, and we never get to the point where the dog can actually touch the bear.
Well, Jessica, I wanted people can learn more. So where should we go if you want to learn more about bear dogs?
So go to windriverbearinstitute.org and you can learn more about these dogs. And we have upcoming puppy litters in the next couple of years. So stay tuned on our website and you can see the puppies as they are born and what their personalities are like. And also we encourage folks, if they want to get involved in interning or whatever, they can reach out to us. And if they live near where we have Karelian Bear dogs, then they can definitely engage with somebody that has them.
Well, thank you so much for joining the Eco News, and join us next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.